All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting for Monday, April 9th, 2018. Do the roll call. Councilperson Michelson.
Here.
Councilperson Smith.
Here.
Councilperson Holcomb.
Here.
And Councilperson Barker.
Here.
All right, thank you. If you'd please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, next up is the approval of the minutes from March 26th Town Council meeting. Ms. Holcomb.
I make a motion that we approve of the minutes from March 26th Town Council meeting.
Okay, it's been moved to approve the minutes from March 26th Town Council meeting. Is there a second? Mr. Michelson.
A second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion from the council? Any public comment on the minutes? Okay. Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Councilperson Barker.
Aye.
Councilperson Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilperson Smith.
Aye.
Councilperson Michelson.
Aye.
Thank you. Next is approval of the biweekly claims. Councilperson Holcomb.
I move we approve of the biweekly claims.
It's been moved to approve the biweekly claims. Is there a second? Mr. Michelson.
I second that.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Any questions or discussion from the council? Ms. Holcomb.
Page 5 of 7, claim 14357 for a rebuild blower for $1,725.
That was our blower down at the sewer plant that started leaking all around the seals. The manufacturer that we bought it from, they paid for part of it and we paid for part of it.
Thank you.
Any other questions from council on the claims? Ms. Barker.
On a previous in the council packet on page 4, down at the bottom of it, I noticed that there was a claim number 14330 number skipped during entry claim. And then you had claim number 14339, claim void due to duplicate entry. What was that?
That 14339 is, oddly enough, it was the other CSED. We get charged $2 every time we submit a payment to CSED, and the claim got duplicate entered. So I had to void one of them, so we're not, because we don't pay it once.
Okay.
So, and the 14330, Black Mountain just automatically assigns numbers, and if for some reason you skip through it, it won't reuse the number.
Okay.
So it's just gone.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the council? Any questions from the public on the claims? Okay. Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Councilperson Smith.
Aye.
Councilperson Michelson.
Aye.
Councilperson Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilperson Barker.
Aye.
Okay. Administrative reports. April, finance officer.
Budget related, but I did want to point out that we are continuing to decrease the receivable amount on the utility billing. Came down another $1,000 this month. I know a few hangers went out last week. Payments are due on those past due balances Wednesday the 11th, and if we don't receive payments, they'll be shut off on Monday the 16th. So Denise is still working those receivables and trying to bring that amount down even further. On the budget front, we had a deadline for department heads to get me their budget requests by last Friday. I've received all but one, so I will be spending this next few days getting all of their requests into Black Mountain. We're asking for a little bit more narrative this year so we can better explain why we're asking what we're asking. So in that line, I will be entering as much notes and information as I'm getting from the department head, so there's clear explanation of what the numbers mean and why we're asking for the amounts that we're asking for. So that's going to be my focus over the next few weeks, is getting those budgets lined out and ready to give the reports back to those department heads by the 27th so they can review it prior to it coming to the workshops.
Any questions from the council for April? Any questions from the public? Thanks, April. Police Department, Chief. Floor is yours.
You want me to talk about utility billing?
Yes, please.
You can talk about whatever you'd like. It's your report.
Okay. All right, so we had our first coffee with the cup. John was one of the people in attendance there. John Monk, he thought it was absolutely fantastic. Maybe. That's good. Okay. We covered a variety of issues. Kim was there as well, too, and had some good points. We talked about drug issues, theft, you know, garbage issues. We talked about upcoming projects like Neighborhood Watch, National Night Out, and those projects are moving forward pretty rapidly, mostly due to having a pretty involved and pretty proactive clerk. She's putting in, I mean, as much time as she can, but you know, she's got a lot of contacts, so things are moving along pretty good there. And the next one, we're planning on having Montana Hope Patrol talk about the Montana Hope Project and what they do. Basically, there's not a lot of people that know about that project. There are some, and I think it's just more for the recognition to, you know, when they do come through and they, or if they're seeking donations and things like that, so that people understand it better. Wanted to bring up the fishing access issue with parking. I know that we put signs down there for when the barricades were up. Now that they're not, I think people are a little bit confused. Is it okay to park along the fence again? Is it not? So if we're going to keep that as a no parking area, I think that we need to have a little bit better signage there. Maybe just a couple more signs with arrows pointing either direction to show that the entire length is no parking. And I know that some of these issues will be discussed tonight regarding parking down there, but it really is becoming a kind of a big problem. Once it gets warmer, it's going to be a big issue because the people that go down and use it for the beach access, basically, they're going to be parking down there. We're going to have people wanting to put their boats in and park as well. And what I'm noticing is that they're not going into the boaters are not going into the back. Yeah, they're parking right next to the river, which it makes sense. I guess they probably don't want to leave their vehicles and their boat trailers in the back part. So I think it's something to definitely consider. We really are going to have a parking issue if we don't take some steps to mitigate that. So, and for the stats, last month, total of 64 calls for service, citations including warnings, 31, 4 arrests, 1 disorderly investigation, 1 vandalism, 1 assault, 1 burglary reported, no frauds, 1 drug offense, and 3 DUIs, and a total of 23 traffic stops. And enforcement summary for previous month: speeding 6, careless 3, reckless 3, stop sign violation 3, insurance 3, driving while suspended 0, and this infamous centerline violation, U-turn 2. Any questions?
Any questions from the council? Any questions from the public for the chief?
Okay. I was wondering if you got a hold of Judy yet.
Regarding.
She was broken into again last night.
Oh, yeah, I am not the best place to talk about that, but yes, I've...
Well, no, she was going to come here, I just thought I'd ask if you had a chance to get back with her.
Yeah, I'm taking care of that stuff. So an issue, so.
Okay.
Anything else?
Thanks, Chief.
Thank you.
Public Works, George.
see our production and our loss there this last month. I do want to say that one of the pluses is that we did fix an inch and a half water service line that was just full of holes. So we took care of some loss there. Ray has been helping me with some of the figures on costs, what it's costing in the lost water. And he said he'd talk about that when we're done here. We worked on 10 meters last month. We got more meters this month just due to the batteries that are dying. And they are under warranty, so got a meter, water meter computer updated. We found that we couldn't, with the newer meters that we're getting, we found that we couldn't talk to them. So when we called the people, they said, oh, you need a meter update. So they took care of that. We're back online there. Water repair at 212 Pine. We had an inspection of the sewer and the water plants within the last couple of months. They seem to be very positive. The blower that we were talking about earlier, the cost, it just came back today, so hopefully we'll have it back in service within the next few weeks. We had a tree that we did remove due to the fact that the roots were getting into our sewer main. So we took it down and we hauled it all away on South Avenue. There was also another tree right back here in the alley, and we talked to those people, and that was the job service. They were very happy to remove it for us, so we didn't have problems there. We do have pictures of it in our sewer main blocking it up. So now that those are gone, that should be a lot better. The man that we bought that blower from, he came down and walked through the plant, and because he was looking to see why this blower, you know, started having problems. And we really couldn't figure out too much. Maybe it might have been with the new computer system. Wasn't quite set right. They figured that it maybe ran too slow for a certain length of period of time, and it overheated the blower. We've been in contact with the computer people about that. The blower is rebuilt, and like I said, we'll put it back in. He looked at it all the way. We plumbed it, and he says, your plumbing's fine, so that should be the end of that. The pothole situation is they're supposed to be here fixing them now, but the way the weather's been, we haven't been able to get any of the potholes fixed, so should be any time with that. I don't have anything else.
Any questions for George from the council?
Basically, the way I figured it out is it's basically costing us about 3 cents a gallon to pump out of wellfield number 4, correct? So if we are estimating our loss last month of 7,533,000 gallons, 530, that would basically be a cost of electricity itself of about 26.21, give or take a few dollars. So if we go back just 4 years, that's $100,000 at an electricity cost that we could be saving if we find these leaks. I would kind of request that we, Mr. Mayor or somebody, put this as a reoccurring agenda item to where we can start finding some solutions to this.
Sure. Keep in mind, a majority of that water is going to be leakage, but in the summertime, there's also a lot of it that's not leakage, it's just usage that's not been metered. So, or that doesn't run through a meter.
Well,
the swimming pool is a good example of that. But this spring, we're going to put meters on everything we can that doesn't yet have a meter to kind of help bring that number down as to where we were, so we know where that leakage is.
Well, at this rate, we should do something, because that's well over $100,000 that has been expended in unnecessary electrical costs, which we get into the equipment usage, pumping more than it needs to, and those sort of things, which actually cost even more money. So I think it would behoove us to save some money here and start concentrating on some of our infrastructure, you know, before it gets way out of control.
George, you have a leak detection figure in your budget for the coming fiscal year, correct? Yeah. So we are kind of getting that project underway here. Vicki.
When will that gentleman start that's going to do the water
We're working on that already.
Are you?
Yeah.
So that may help you try and find some of these things
out? Well, not at first.
Not at first.
Because we're going to do all the mapping first.
Oh, okay.
Of both systems. So then we did get only two volunteers to help from the high school on that.
Any other questions for George?
John O'Bannon, my next door neighbor, would like to know when their backyard is going to be restored from where they had to dig it up and fix the water line last year.
Well, I can't tell you anything on that because that was the company that came in and did the restoration. You know, did
they
work.
Did the contract to the town, so for the town should take the lead and get it fixed.
Well, we did a lot of it last year while we were there, and they said they would be sending their crew back in the spring. And we told John that they'd be back in the spring to finish up all the arcs that they tore up.
We'll follow up on that.
Yeah.
All right. If there's no other questions for George, we'll move on to guests. We've got Superintendent Dr. Moore to present the proposed 2018 school bonds.
First off, thank you, Mayor and Council, for having me here tonight. I'm going to go through the entire bond election process for both the elementary and high school. And it's my understanding that the council requested a report on where we are with this. And so hopefully this will answer your questions. And if there are more questions that you have at the end, I'd be happy to try to answer those, or I'll find the answers for you. Officially, the bond election is on May 8th. Even though it is a mail ballot, those ballots will go out before May the 8th, and then they're counted, of course, on the election day. A summary, we started a long-range master plan for the Stevensville School District with MMW Architects of Missoula last spring. And that group identified $36 million in needs for the school district. And the school board prioritized those needs down to $16.6 million between the elementary and high school. And based on community input, teacher input, and when I say school community, I mean our community at large. We try to invite parents, business members, students, teachers, everyone in to the discussion. Priorities identified: student safety, of course, deferred maintenance, and I'll get into that in greater detail. Bob, you're worrying me. If you have to sit like that for 30 minutes, I'm afraid you're going to have a crick in your neck. If you're willing to stay there, that's fine. Renovations to buildings and grounds, sanitation, parking access. The entire community knows that we have a severe parking problem around the schools. And so those two bond issues will be voted on again on May 8th. Now there's a non-contiguous district that I need to explain. A non-contiguous district means that our elementary and high school districts for Stevensville are the same, but the Lone Rock district also is part of the Stevensville High School District. So the Lone Rock residents will vote on the high school bond only, and anybody that lives within the Stevensville Elementary District will vote on both the elementary bond and high school bonds. The bond requests, $6.876 million on the elementary side and $9.745 on the high school side. By Montana law, we only have to list the principal amount in the ballot. So that's what, you know, an estimate that you see, approximate interest based on a 20-year bond at 3%. We didn't have to do that, but we strongly believe that the public should at least have an estimate of what their, you know, what that looks like over 20 years. So I wanted to make sure that we included that. The elementary side, unfortunately, in this day and age, safety is a huge concern. New entries. Right now, we have a single door entry with no vestibule walking into the K-3 building. You walk in, open the door, you're in. And so we're looking at a new main entry on the south side of the elementary school, changing our bus drop-off, or leaving our bus drop-off, changing our traffic drop-off to the south side. And as when I came to the town council last time, I spoke to you about the Phillips Street relocation, and you gave preliminary approval for that. And so that is that relocation to the south side, and you'll see some architectural renditions of that. Of course, energy savings and cost. We don't have electronic heating controls. We did replace the new boiler because we were losing the boiler in the elementary school, but we still need to replace the control units, LED lighting, dual pane windows. We have failing windows in the elementary. New fans in the heating units. We call them the old squirrel cage heating units. They pull air off the outside. Difficult to get parts for, but we are working to renovate those. We are out of space in the K-3 building. We took our computer lab out of that building and put in a kindergarten classroom. We are busting at the seams in the elementary K-3 building. There are no more spaces in that building. Right now, our teachers eat lunches in the classrooms, and as far as where they go to prepare their copies and anything they need to prepare, they do that in the hallway or in their classrooms. Renovation of restrooms. We have seen an increase in a handicap population for our elementary school, and we need to renovate both our special education restrooms and classrooms, as well as the restrooms in that building, a 1970s era building. Once you touch a building, of course, you have to bring all those up to ADA standards. Exterior windows. Deterioration we need to work on. We have wood clad windows on the outside that are starting to deteriorate. Drainage, we have a lack of positive drainage. The building now, the water actually, the drip line drains in underneath the building to the wooden stringers. Remodel the gym. We'll have a separate entrance, and the 4-8 students will have to pass through because we're adding on to the elementary school. Of course, I spoke to the relocation of Phillips Street. That's a huge issue for us because we have to cross our kindergarten through 8th grade students over that street. Young kids, 6 times a day, over and back, counting as 2. So 3 recesses a day. So they're crossing to Phillips Street, which is an active street, and we have fishbone parking on Phillips Street as well. So there are 2 crossings there. We put an adult out there with a stop sign every day just to make sure. Deferred maintenance, 2008 legislature commissioned a study for the entire state of Montana of all school districts to identify deferred maintenance. They found over $200 million in deferred maintenance. The state legislature has not funded $200 million in deferred maintenance. They have had quality schools grant, their competitive grants. We were able to get part of the boiler out of the quality schools grant, but they make a prioritized list, and it's few and far between the school districts that are able to tap into those funds. And of course, if we update the building, anytime you touch a building, you have to bring it up to current safety, accessibility, and fire standards. This is a picture that I brought to you last time, the council and the mayor, the last time we met. We proposed the relocation of Phillips Street. This is Park Avenue. This is our current elementary school and our parking loop. Phillips Street right now goes all the way through, and we have no parking. So we're looking at parking spaces, relocation of Phillips Streets, the easement as far as utility easement stays, and then the 4 classrooms would be, there's kind of a gravel playground, abandoned playground right here between the 2 buildings. And so what we would be doing is remodeling so the students can come straight through to their gym, music classes, the school nurse, and the middle school students can come through and exit down the hallway out to the playground area. So we'll have the playground area back behind the parking area. Parents can come in, drop off. This is an architectural rendition. I've been told by engineers that when the engineers get a hold of this, the city and county won't be happy about 3 entrances right here in that short of space, and they'll probably work it different, so the parking lot entrance might be over here with an exit here or something like that. This is our current entrance. You can see it's a single door entry vestibule. Secretary does not have a line of sight who is coming into the building. You can see my secretary standing there opening the door. Once you are in the building, you are in. You're amongst the students and teachers. Here's a sample of some of our positive drainage problems. You can see the scalloping along the building. where it used to be up along the building right here, and now it's draining underneath the building. That's about a size 12 or 13 foot in that hole right there. You can see more scalloping on this side. So both the north and south sides of the building. Here's where we cross the street multiple times per day with our elementary students to the playground. So Phillips Street is here. This is an active street. You can see the wishbone parking on either side of it. And here's parking facing the playground. Special education. You can see that in that room, we use temporary dividers. We don't have space for wheelchairs. We do not have a restroom facility in that room. There is obviously some storage needs in the building. You can see we use Rubbermaid vents. Windows, wood clad windows that are starting to deteriorate. And here's what the front of the elementary school would look like that would face what now exists as Phillips Street. So that parking drop off, this would face to the south. There'd be a double lock off vestibule. The four classrooms on this side, this is the existing elementary gym. And the students would be able to pass through into the elementary gym. High school bond. Very similar needs, classrooms, student safety, energy savings. Student safety, I'll show you a picture. Again, when you walk into the building, we do not have a great way to lock off that building and have supervision of line of sight for the administration. We have older lighting. We still have some single pane windows in the building that need to be replaced. Our heating units in there, we can no longer get parts for some of our heating units. We're looking at changing the parking to the east side to help alleviate the parking problem and putting the main entrance on the east side of the building and creating a new hallway and corridor around the middle of the building for common student educational space. The orange soffit on the outside is asbestos containing material. That's why we haven't painted it or done anything with it. And so we'll have to mitigate the asbestos. Our restroom facilities, we do not have any handicap accessible restrooms in our building, in the high school building at all. We have 1960s era fixtures that we have welded parts onto to make them kind of work, but they're not always functional. We're looking at modernizing our library, opening up our library instructional space for common instructional space to accommodate modern instructional standards, moving our PE practice field to the east, and renovating our science classrooms, renovating the lockers in the main gymnasium. We are totally inappropriate with the number of toilets available. We have one stool in the women's locker room, one stool and one urinal in the men's locker room. Our courtyard between the two wings right now is not space that's ever used, so we're looking at closing that off. And again, I would reference that 2008 deferred maintenance study that identified over $2 million in deferred maintenance in the high school. This is what the high school would look like. This is Park Avenue. Here's our current entrance. We're looking at remodeling this into teaching and library commons area, moving the office space to this side. This will be instructional. And then we would face the east. Parking lot would come in, and the parking lot would be on the east side. This is our PE space right here. And we would move that PE space. We'll put a hallway in so we don't have these two south doors that are open to the public to go in and out. And keep the parking loop for bus parking. Here's a picture of the high school entrance. This is Katie Sutherland's head that you can see right over the top. Someone can walk through that door and they're walking right by the office. You're not walking actually to the office. You can go right by it and be in the building. Some of our current wiring issues. This is not a fault of anyone. This is just what happens over time when you have a 1960s era building and you try to put modern technology and wiring and Category 6 wiring and fire system wiring into a building. These are all systems that were added after the building was built. More examples. This is actually a welding table where we weld out in our agricultural shop room. There was never conduit placed over the fire system wiring. All this red wiring that you can see right along here is, of course, our fire system, and they're welding right above it. Several places, we obviously ran short of wire and just spanned the corner instead of putting it in place. High school boiler, that's a 1960s era boiler you're looking at. Some asbestos-containing boiler that will need to get taken care of. It has reached the end of its life expectancy, and it is not energy efficient. Here's an example of our restroom facilities with lack of handicap accessibility. You cannot get a wheelchair into any of those stalls. We have problems with the stalls locking, and the sinks generally function, but they take a lot of maintenance. Here's a picture of the asbestos-containing material and some of the outside ventilation that we've blocked off because of lack of use and the fact that our heaters don't work. Windows in high school, we are beginning to experience dry rot in the windows. They're metal clad windows, but there's nothing to reattach the windows to. Picture of the locker room, lack of ventilation, lack of restroom facilities. You're looking in the lower right-hand corner. There is a sink, then there is a urinal, and then there is a stool. That is the restroom facility in the boys' locker room. That is it. Architectural rendition of what the high school front would look like. Notice that we moved the office to the east side. We elevated the roof to bring natural light in. And I'll show you the front side of that. This is the Park Avenue elevation, looking back at the high school where the existing entrance would be. We're working out a 1940s era maintenance shop. We're looking at the bus barn and moving the maintenance shop into the existing bus barn. Our out facilities, athletic facilities, we do not have running water or working sewer to any of those facilities. We use porta potties and we transport all potable water to our concession stand. The closest location is at the north end of the soccer field for both water and sewer. We have done a property boundary relocation with the county. That has passed through, so we do now have the right to put water and sewer into those facilities. It was an agricultural exclusion before. We use shipping containers for storage. We'd like to dispense with the shipping containers, put a facility out there with restrooms, concession stand, running water, and places where, you know, small groups of students can go in and change, and also if we have inclement weather, get out of the weather. Tennis courts, we now have some tennis courts that have 2-inch cracks the entire length of the tennis court right through the center of the court. They just are failing worse and worse each year. Our grandstands, we have started tearing down the grandstands at this time. They are structurally unsound, and when the engineer gave us the letter that stated they were structurally unsound, we closed them off and started demolition on those stands. 400 meter track. We have a 440 dirt track. We haul all of our students to Corvallis to practice. We have no track meets here. We're running on a dirt center track that's the old English style. We need to put an all-weather track in. There's, you know, a comment out there that we're putting artificial turf in the football field. That's never been a part of our discussion, any part of the discussion as far as remodeling our athletic facilities and making that a modern facility. This is our current maintenance building. I've been told that was a shop building for instruction for some people in the community. Now it's a maintenance building, but you can see the roof line is starting to sag. It's a building that has served its useful purpose in life, but needs to go. Here's an example of some of the cracks in the tennis courts. We actually have a tennis racket standing by itself inside one of those cracks. Another crack, we have a tennis ball that is halfway down into the crack, pushed down into the crack. They're that wide. our existing concession stand, we would move to the other end of the field, not this structure, but we would, of course, be at the other end of the field, and this would be just turned into storage. Runways, more of the track, our jump areas with the cracks. We're just, you know, we need to start maintaining things before we start hurting students and public that's using the facility. Grandstands. Some of these plates that sit on these stringers, some of these concrete stringers have settled. In the north corner, there's a, one of these plates is about 5 to 6 inches off of the concrete support at this time. If you look at this, you can see this was welded. You can see the sag. The beam here is a vertical. This has about a 2 to 3 inch gap. You can see it's smaller here and smaller here. It's obviously sagging out to the right and starting to bend. Bond summary. There are 20 year bonds. That's the maximum length of time in the state of Montana that you can lend an education bond. The elementary and high school amounts, how we come up with those round figures. Bonds, are, public bonds are sold in $5,000 increments generally. They'll fudge a little bit. And so, you know, we'll, that's how you come up with those round figures. Why $100,000 and $200,000 in market value? Again, that's state law. It's for ease of calculation so people can figure out what their market value is. So the cost is broken out per month and per year on $100,000 and $200,000 home. If you were going to be both in the elementary and high school district, you would add those two figures together. Why now? Here is a copy of the 19 pages of the deferred maintenance for our school district. I just pulled one out. I pulled our windows for the high school and installation of energy efficient windows. In 2008, it was $308,000. I figured 4 or 5% inflation on it, $414,000. So it just continues to escalate and escalate and escalate. And those are the remaining costs of the deferred maintenance that we have. More information, my secretary is great with technology. He has put together a bond information page. If you go to the StephensvilleSchools.org, you can select school bond. It will give you this information. You can go down and, on Montana Cadastral. You can find your property by name or address. Please use the market value, not the taxable value. There's a market value that's listed by Ravalli County. If you plug that into, if you're in the elementary, it will say Stephensville Elementary bond calculator. If you're in the Lone Rock District, you would just plug in the Lone Rock. And once you plug that number in, it will automatically calculate your estimated bond cost. Again, I say estimated because of interest. We don't know what the interest rate we will get on the bonds. And also, as taxable valuation of the district goes up, cost to the individual taxpayer is spread among more taxpayers. We have questions asked, questions answered. We have a photo log. We have videos. Please feel free to call my office at any time. I'll try to answer any questions you have. And if I don't have the answer, I will surely find it for you.
What's the name of that website again?
StephensvilleSchools.org. Let me back up. It's right there at the bottom of the page if you want the full address.
Sir, what's the timeline that you get this bond approved that these repairs would go into effect?
It's going to take the architects probably 8 to 12 weeks just to, they did preliminary work, but they did not build the plans.
Yeah.
And so you have to go through a plan certification process, permitting through the city. All of the school grounds are within the city limits, so we have to get permitting, certified plans.
We just moved here from Texas. So, I'm probably going to be going to school here next year. So.
Once we have all that, we would hope to, you know, see by fall, maybe late summer, but that's a stretch. Probably fall, some of the construction, where we're not interrupting classes.
Yeah, for sure.
At some point in time, when you tear the middle out of the high school and raise the roof 4 feet,
yeah,
and try to work on educational space in there, we're going to be affecting some educational spaces and having to reroute students. But you know, as early as the fall, we start construction in some of it.
Okay.
A great example of that, four classroom addition on the elementary school, there's nothing there right now. We could fix that off and some of the groundwork and things could be done. Mm-hmm. There's just some backup slides. This is a footprint of the district. We've already looked at Phillips Street in the master plan and moving Phillips Street out and around the high school. The walking path, I should back up and show this master plan. This is where we're moving the PE fields. They're currently right here. And so we just go to this area by the Cinex ball plant. Costs, this is all on the website. I'm not going to burn a lot of your time with this. You can log on to the website, take a look. Our deferred maintenance in the elementary is $1.121 million by itself. The addition is a large part of it, $2,076,000. High school deferred maintenance, $2 million, just over $2 million. That excludes the ag and the industrial arts classrooms in the gymnasium. We have a leaking roof and some things we need to repair in the gymnasium as well. I won't burn a lot of time here either. We have the shared costs and the total costs. Thank you for your time. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to mention that my name is Kathy Cook. And I'm vice chair of the school board. Tomorrow morning at 11:30, we have an open house at the school, so you can come and meet with Dr. Moore. There might be another board member there, and you can kind of take a look at things. And next Wednesday, the 18th, we also have a 3 o'clock open house. That way you can experience after school, which is always fun. I think morning's probably the worst, but after school is a good time there. So, like I said, there'll be some tours and things going on, so if you have any questions, you can always come to the open houses also.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions from the public or the council for Dr. Moore? Mr. Sharkey.
Is the street construction part of the budget, or is that like a government?
The relocation as part of the budget. Yeah. It's, we came to the town and said we need to move our playground next to the school. So we're asking to relocate the street.
Okay. Bob, thanks a lot for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to grab a couple of electronic things here.
Go for it. We'll give you some time.
One other thing is, as Dr. Moore mentioned, it is a mail ballot. So if you are a registered voter, you will receive a ballot in the mail. They go out next Wednesday, the 18th. So you need to make sure that you're registered at least by this Thursday, so that you can get on the list and make sure that you receive one next week as well.
Okay. You got everything you needed? Great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Thank you
it.
Very much. Thank
Good
you.
Year.
We'll let you go.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Okay, we'll move on. There's no correspondence this evening, so we'll move on to public comment. It's an opportunity to comment for the public to comment on anything on tonight's agenda or under the general jurisdiction of the town of Stevensville.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is public comment for the things that are coming up, or do we comment at the time of the...
Your preference. You can comment now on anything on tonight's agenda or on anything that we have control over, or you can wait until that agenda item and still receive an opportunity to present your public comment. So it's usually the case. All right. If there's no public comment, we'll move on to unfinished business, discussion, decision, a draft ordinance prohibiting the use of tobacco products in town parks and recreation facilities. A draft was sent out in your packets. We've got the Girl Scouts who presented earlier here with us tonight to give us any feedback if they'd like to. This was provided to us. This ordinance was a kind of a plain language ordinance that was provided to us by Tobacco Free River Valley. So this is a tobacco-free ordinance versus a smoke-free ordinance. So it prohibits all tobacco use. You can see through the notes that Brian's had an opportunity to go through it and make his suggestions and changes, none of which I had any qualms about. I think that they're appropriate. So I'd leave it to the council to decide how they'd like to proceed. Mr. Michelson.
As in anything else in the park, with our skate park and everything, how is this going to be enforced? We can put everything on the book there.
So, Tobacco-Free River Valley kind of lent some advice to that effect, and they found nationwide and statewide that signage is a pretty effective means. That you'll always have, regardless of how many signs you put up or how many laws you put into place, there's always going to be somebody that breaks the rules. But this, I think, will drastically reduce the number of people who do use tobacco products in our parks just through signage. We still may have some problem areas, but as the attorney and I discussed, I don't see anyone being cited into municipal court for violating this ordinance. It's more of a community wellness effort. Yes, go ahead.
How are we going to enforce this at night if our police can't get out of our vehicles at night due to a safety issue?
I don't know as though it's going to be a priority to enforce. Certainly at night. I mean, the parks are in theory closed at night anyway, by a resolution you all passed. So parks are closed. So if anyone's in the park, whether they're smoking or not, they're still breaking the law because they're in the park outside of allowed hours. So that would probably be the primary offense. I don't know as though they'd be written up for this. Ms. Barker.
I know you had said that you were going to look into finding some signage through River Valley County's tobacco-free programs. Have you been able to look into that?
They have standard signage that they can send our community if we adopt an ordinance. It's this park is tobacco-free, blah, 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 whatever that is. And they've been able to provide that to communities for free. So there would be no cost to us. If we would like additional signage above what they can provide, then I would say there may be a cost to that. But we're early enough in the budget cycle, we could budget for that if needed. I think that they're able to provide us with enough signage, though. Ms. Holcomb.
How does this affect the activities that happen during Creamery or the Celtic Games, or how does that affect what's going on at the park during those times?
It would prohibit smoking or any tobacco use during Creamery picnic or any function down there at any given time. The exception being that those activities that are related to religious freedom would be exempt. So if we had a Native American group or something like that come in that used tobacco products for their religious purposes, then those are exempt, obviously, under this ordinance. We wouldn't want to get into any problems with religious freedom. So. Ms. Barker. And admittedly, Creamery Picnic would be one of those where it may be difficult to enforce to say, hey, there's no smoking in the park. But again, the studies are showing that signage alone will cut down on the number of those instances where, we're not going to catch everybody. And this isn't necessarily an active enforcement issue. This is kind of a more passive deal. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion that we draft ordinance prohibiting the use of tobacco products in town parks and recreation facilities.
Just so I'm clear, are you asking that we move forward on bringing this forward for a first reading?
Yes, it is a discussion decision.
Yeah, I just, your language in your motion. So you're asking, so your motion is to bring this forward for a first reading?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Is there a second? Ms. Holcomb.
I'll second it.
Okay, so moved and seconded to bring Ordinance 164 forward for a first reading. Is there any further discussion from the council? Any public comment? Mr. Cruz.
Jim Cruz, 316 Ninth Street, Stevenville, Montana.
Couple of little things come to mind here. During Creamery Picnic and other activities down at the park, sometimes the council authorizes people to camp down there. Are you intending to regulate their ability to smoke their cigarettes or chew their tobacco inside their campers? And you have transient people driving through the park in vehicles, private vehicles going to the dump and things like that. That would technically inhibit them from practicing their free exhibition of whatever it is they want to smoke in their car. So just thought I'd kick that out there for you.
Is there any other public comment? Mr. Sharkey.
What are the penalties?
The penalties, there's, you know, Brian had a note in there, and he'd like to look at some language that will come forward at the first reading that isn't necessarily the standard $500, 6 months in jail. Because the problem, if it were for some reason cited under municipal code and they were brought to city court, as soon as you associate jail time with an offense, they're eligible for a public defender, which can get expensive for the public. So it'll likely, you know, and that's something that the council can provide input on is what kind of fine they'd like to associate with that offense. If it's a $50 fine first time, or if they're trespassed, you know, for subsequent offenses, I can ask Brian to bring forward a reasonable offense or a consequence. Any further public comment or comment from the council? Okay. Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Councilperson Barker.
Aye.
Councilperson Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilperson Smith.
Aye.
Councilperson Michelson.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. We'll bring that forward in the next agenda. Move on to new business, discussion, decision, employee health care benefits for fiscal year 18-19. April, do you want to present?
Yes, I will. So we have received our notice of final rate for this next fiscal year from MMIA. Their original anticipation of adjustment was between 5 and 7%, so I was very happy to see when they came back with 3.7% increase.
Right click it.
There we go. Okay, so as you can see, there is obviously an increase in each of the plan options. However, as has been the case in the last several years, there is no increase in the dental or vision coverage premium. And if we continue with what has been the trend over the last, I don't know how many years, part of the increase would be absorbed by the town and part of the increase would be absorbed by, oh, I did cut that off, by the employees. So I unfortunately cut this off. So you can see that the monthly increase in the premium, $218.79 would be absorbed by the town, and it's 257 something that would be an increase that would be covered by an increase on the employee side of things. So we both parties would share in that, sharing the cost of that increase. So you can see that our premiums on the dental and vision side obviously didn't change. Currently, the town per year contributes the $70,000. It would go up to $73,000. So the annual increase would be $26,25.48. Broken down to the month, would be $218.79 a month on the town side. And again, I wish I hadn't cut this off because it actually is more that is going to be there on the backs of the employees. So that's where we stand with that, depending on what you guys decide.
So the two options you have with this agenda item are you can approve the increase or accept the increase of the employee health care benefits, or you can deny that increase, and that increase would then be transferred
only onto the employee. So it's a question of whether the town wants to continue providing the benefit level that we have in the past. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion that we approve the employee health care benefits for fiscal year 18-19.
Okay. Is there a second? Ms. Holcomb.
I'll second it.
So we moved and seconded to approve the employee health care benefits for fiscal year 18-19 as presented. Is there any discussion from the council? Any public comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Councilperson Smith.
Aye.
Councilperson Barker.
Aye.
Councilperson Holcomb.
Aye.
And Councilperson Michelson.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, if you leave me the mouse so that we can, unless Renee wants to, would you mind scrolling down? Thank you. We're short on staff this evening. Thanks for stepping up and being voluntold.
Hi.
Next agenda item is agenda item B, discussion decision on a draft electronic communication policy. Mr. Michelson.
I object to the consideration of the next agenda item and would like to call for a vote.
Okay. Since you have the book in front of you, does this require a second?
No, it does not. It doesn't require a second. It doesn't require... it's not debatable. It's not amendable. It just comes before a vote.
Okay, Mr. Michelson objects to the agenda item, although I didn't get a chance to fully present it. We'll call for the vote. Councilperson Barker.
Yes.
Councilperson Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilperson Smith.
Aye.
Councilperson Michelson.
Aye.
Okay, we'll move on to agenda item C, consideration of the opportunity to lease and or purchase 201 Main Street as a new town hall. We were approached by the property owner. She's interested in selling. It's a advantageous opportunity for the town if we would like to address some of the issues that we've had with this current facility. I think everyone here is aware that generally every budget cycle we come back and say we don't have enough space, we don't have enough space. Tonight is a pretty good example of the lack of space we have. We're somewhat bursting at the seams, and it's a bit of a challenge. So the property owner is motivated and is somewhat on a time frame. So I told her that the best I could do is at least bring it to the council for your consideration, is to find out what the intent of the council would be in this matter. If you'd like to move forward with this or not, I by no means am requesting that or asking you to give me permission to go make an offer tomorrow, but I would like to be able to go to the property owner tomorrow and let her know what the council thinks, if this is a doable project or not. You see the site, the potential site plan, so I'll kind of let you guys decide how you'd like to move forward, and not obviously a motion would be favorable, but if you'd like to discuss it before a motion, then I'm okay with that. Councilperson Michelson.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to ask how far are we into this, as far as you, as far as the council. We know nothing of this until it came upon the agenda. So as far as your output, what is your knowledge as to far as a bid or whatever have you put into it? Was there any bids put in on this, or is it just still in the pre-stages where everybody's just talking?
This is a talking, there's been some preliminary cost estimates thrown around as to what it would cost to purchase the building and renovate the building, but there has been no bids placed, obviously, because mm-hmm. we have nothing to bid on. We don't own anything.
Okay.
So it's just been a discussion, you know, preliminary, kind of get some ideas together so that we had something to bring to the council in this respect. The ball kind of rolled a little bit with the police chief bringing forward some challenges in the building that related to safety, and some of those challenges you kind of heard in a roundabout way from the school in regards to the office and the line of sight and some safety concerns for the clerks. And when we have court in session, we often have inmates waiting in the back in the police department, which basically blocks off any access to the restrooms in this building. So they usually have to either run over to Senex or go around and use the upstairs restrooms. So to answer your question directly, this is still a discussion. Mm-hmm. The council could give me further direction as to if they'd like solicit or solidified not figures on what this would look like. But to move forward, I really would like your permission. Ms. Holcomb.
Where do we have the money to do this?
So we have available, we have some reserves built up in a few of our funds, and so most of our funds would take a share in this because this building serves for administration of all of our funds, right? There are some rural development opportunities for grant funding that we are competitive for because we're a low-income community. And our tax base is such that we are eligible for free money to accomplish this project in whole or part. We're also eligible for some attractive loans through interest rates and that sort of thing. Another financing option you have if you don't want to pay cash and you don't want to go through a loan or something like that, you could ask, as the school has done, you could ask for an increase in mills or a bond issue from the public. We have some constraints if you decide to finance this. If you went through Intercap loan, we're limited to a 10-year loan. It brings our payment up a little bit, but the interest rate is such that it's still something that the organization can handle. It doesn't overextend us. We're limited to 10 years because we're not necessarily limited to 10 years. I should correct myself. You're limited to 10 years if you do not go to the voters to ask for the debt. If you go to the voters and say, hey, we'd like to get this loan for this amount, and this is the interest rate, da-da-da-da-da, are you okay with this? Then you can extend that beyond the 10-year span. But preliminarily, the cost of this project would be under $500,000. There's no way it would exceed that. In the discussions that I've had with the potential of remodel and with the landowner, which is why I say it's advantageous. Mr. Michelson.
Due to the fact that we're still paying for a water and sewer bond, that everybody is still pretty adamant about the price of that, and then if we purchase this for a new town hall, personally, I don't think how the public would be very, it would be very popular, if at all, in the public's eye. As you well know, this is a full meeting tonight, but 99% of our meetings are pretty empty. And a lot of people that do not know the inner workings of town government or even town hall would not know what it needed to be done or not to be done, as you don't know as far as fixing. Improvements within the hall. I know we have gravel space here. We have to look at the bright side. We were able to go down a couple of years ago. Mr. Cruz and I, Mrs. Tadvik and Don went down to a small town in Twin Bridges. And that town hall was half the size of this room here. They have their council meetings. They hold everything in there. And they're just happy to have a building. And I'm not saying that we don't need, I'm just saying that the cost of this town, I could think of many, many things as far as improvements, like a swimming pool or a lot of other things before jumping into a new town hall because, well, it looks nice on Main Street and it is a beautiful building, has more space, and yes, it would have its advantages as far as the police and staff would go. But it comes down to cost and looking at our budget. We're pretty tight either way, and you quoted just yourself a little bit ago. We would have to rob a little bit of money from each department to make this work, correct?
I would be careful not to use the term rob. We're not robbing money. The intent of cash reserves and often set-asides is to purchase capital assets such as buildings, equipment, etc. So it's not necessarily a robbing. It's just it matters on what the philosophy of the council is and where you best see your investment and where the opportunities come forward at any given time. So, you know, this isn't an opportunity that the council or the public wish to proceed with now. Just know that, you know, my administration, the department heads, and future administrations will likely be back at this table with alternate plans that may or may not cost the same amount of money. We don't know that. I would venture to say that, you know, any endeavor to completely rebuild Town Hall would be expensive, but, it's all circumstantial. One piece that did come up with the chief of police was is that if we moved administration to another building, wherever that be, and this building was turned over to public safety entirely, that there is a lease opportunity from other law enforcement agencies to utilize space in this building, which would house all of our law enforcement in one place. That opportunity exists to kind of help offset the cost. Should we choose to proceed that way? If you'd like to, you can kind of scroll through it until you hit the end. Mr. Smith, I'm sorry.
Well, I just still kind of get back to, I've been working with the streets and alleys and the water guys, and there are needs there within their system at this time that aren't being addressed that have a better effect on our community as far as streets, sidewalks, equipment that needs to be purchased for them to have the equipment to use to do these repairs. And then we also need to start looking at an employee for them because, I mean, again, we put off all of these projects each winter and we continually are losing staff. So we never get the projects completely done, so we're falling by the wayside continually. And I think we would be better focused to start looking at those issues and at least start solving them in some fashion before we try to get a bigger, larger building that's going to require more maintenance, because right now we don't even have the crew to take care of what we have. And again, I see the building is listed on the real estate for $650,000. It was actually up at over $900,000. So for us to buy it for $500 and retrofit it for $500 seems a little...
The liquor license is not included in the figure that I gave you. So the liquor license is included in the listing price. And because the building owner is... interested in an endeavor with the city, the cost of that has gone down significantly. But unless the council is inclined to keep the liquor license,
I would keep the liquor license.
It doesn't sound like a bad idea. But that's why there's the disparity in between the listing price and what I just gave you, Ms. Holcomb.
Yes, we have a small building, but the problem I have here is a couple of weeks ago, you were at a meeting with the commissioners quoting, "We survive heavily on our downtown Main Street tax base. It is what pays our bills." And then you come, then we get this on the agenda to come and talk about purchasing a $500,000 building that could put a business in there to help keep paying our bills. So that's, I have a little bit of a problem.
Sure. And that is a disadvantage to this maneuver, certainly. I think that there are plenty of pros and there are also its fair share of cons in this endeavor. The property tax would be about a $1,500 hit to our funds. That's currently what the property tax on that building is to the city. It's about $1,500.
Are you sure about that number?
Mm-hmm.
A $600,000, actually $1 million building, the taxes that we get for that is only $1,500.
Well, there's a difference in assessed value versus market value and what it sells for.
Well, I realize that.
But my last...
We were just talking about the school board bond and how much per building at $100,000 estimated value was going to cost the bond of the residents to pay for, and that's based on property values, so that building has a property value, and it's got to be bringing more than $1,500 in tax revenue to the town of Stevensville.
You could go look at the tax bill, and I mean, you could do the same thing I did and look at their tax bill.
I did, and I came up with $7,000.
Which, I mean, you looked at both of these properties, these two lots, mm-hmm. and came up with $7,000. Okay, well, I may stand corrected. I don't think it's $7,000. That's a lot.
That's a pretty impressive lot.
Nonetheless, it's certainly the council's decision. If the council has no further comment, we can certainly ask for public comment. Ms. Barker, do you have anything before I... Nope, okay. Ms. Knapp.
Lori Knapp, 526 3rd Street. I guess my question is, you know, we have a main street that's really pretty active right now, and they're working very hard on economic development and main street design and so on. So I really would wonder what is their position in terms of the long-term strategy for our town. Does this really enhance our economic development, or does it take away a very large commercial property? So I'd love to hear from Main Street.
Sure. Tanya, come on.
Tanya here at 106 College Street. So a couple of things. I don't think Town Hall should be on Main Street. I think we need to leave the buildings on Main Street for businesses. I know Main Street's working on, you know, trying to bring businesses in and stuff, and that's a pretty big building to take away from downtown. Downtown storefronts. Anyhow, the other thing is, you know, they're asking for a pretty big bond for the school. We're still still paying on the levy for the school, and then adding another one. I mean, we've got a lot of elderly people here in town who, you know, they have a hard time paying their bills. They live paycheck to paycheck, or social security check to social security check. That's going to be a pretty hard one on them, plus the water bill and stuff like that. So I'd like you guys to think about that. I just don't think Main Street or Town Hall should be on Main Street.
Thank you. Is there any further public comment? Mr. Sharkey.
Michael Sharkey, 203 St. Mary's Drive. I find myself in the odd position of agreeing with Tanya on this one. I do understand, though, that when something presents itself, like this building, it probably is prudent to take a good look at whether or not it would be beneficial. But I think I'm in agreement with everybody else that suggests that Main Street should be for business. Okay.
Is there any other public comment? Anything else from the council? Okay, it's my understanding then, you know, if you'd like a motion to formalize this, that's certainly your decision, but I'll go forward and let the landowner know that at this time the town is not interested in any opportunity to purchase her building or the adjacent land. That consensus? Okay, we'll move on. Next agenda item is discussion decision to direct the mayor to reopen the town of Stevensville temporary fishing access site. Council members Michelson and Barker. Would either of you two like to present the agenda item? Mr. Michelson.
At first, I received a couple of emails, one from Renee and one from Whitney. and they made it stated that since that the mayor had shut the river access down, and in their accordance that the park board had okayed it during public comments, that it was, they asked us to take it off the agenda because since the park board made that decision, that it should be final. Well, the park board does not make the final decision. It is here in resolution number 11, be it further resolved that the advisory board shall have no policy-making powers, the same being reserved to the Stephenville Town Council, but shall be empowered to investigate and make recommendations of policy to the said council. The Stephenville Town Council shall, from time to time, provide in writing guidelines to the Park Advisory Board, setting forth the powers and duties of the board and providing the procedure under which the board shall operate. And I also did look at the minutes of the park board, and it wasn't on the agenda. And number two, it only came up in public comments, which is just like public comments here. So it really had no standing as far as the access being closed. Now, that said, the mayor does have the right to close the fishing access site. There's no rule that says he cannot. But according to our city attorney, he also has to follow through with the due process, which is to bring it before the council, have the council work it out like we are doing now. And if we do or don't decide to keep it open, it still has to go before a public hearing and all through that process to make it final and work. So our question to you is, why did you close the fishing access site?
Well, there were a number of reasons. First and foremost, it was a safety concern that George and I both shared of the expected high water that we will receive with the flood season. Also, in attending a meeting with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, when I asked them about the fishing access site and whether it would be advantageous to leave it open or not, they indicated that they didn't see any reason for us to keep the site open. They, based on their evaluation of the site, thought that once the floodwater came through, the road that was put in would be restored back to the trail that it was for the most part in the low-lying areas, and the bank would likely be restored as well. And then, I mean, the additional reason to closing it or not leaving it open in anticipation of the flood was that we told the public it was temporary, and we kind of hit that point where temporary is temporary, and that there was no further reason to keep it open. We had a secured fishing access site up the stream. Ms. Barker.
I actually went back through and listened to the audio on the park board meeting, and several different key points that I kind of questioned was that you said that it would be a process, you know, it wasn't going to happen right away. We have a permit that was signed with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks too that isn't to expire until, I believe, July. And so, is it August? So then we closed this site off early. We had not seen a contract from Fish, Wildlife, and Parks stating that the Florida Olin now is good with everything. We haven't seen her word coming back. She could close that site off at any time, and then our fishermen, again, are out of sight. So, and for this to happen, and you to say this is not going to be renewed, there's several different options that we can use still that temporary site for, not necessarily vehicles going down, but those that want to take a raft down there, carry that raft down that path. We still have those options, but to lift that up and over top of those gates, maybe we can put a sign up that says no motorized vehicles past this point. You said that you were waiting to hear from Fish, Wild, and Life and Parks on a lot of different aspects, and when the permit expires, changes, you know, these are things that it is temporary, but we still don't know for sure that the Fort Owen won't come in there and, you know, go through with it. Yeah, there's talks of it. We haven't, as a council, seen any of this. And I think as the community, those that donated to that effort to put in the money to build the site, I think that it still needs to go in front of the public as well, because there was public insight on it, and now it's shut off.
Okay. Mr. Michelson?
And also, as far as the floodplain, I'm on the Valley County Planning and Disaster Management team, and I would have got the first memo before anybody. And I called the lady in the Valley County, and she said there is no memo, there's no talk of flooding yet. When it does come, not just our site, but the one that's they're being talked about now between the lady and the fishing hut, that would be closed. It's common sense when flood season comes. Nobody gets in the water. So it'll all be closed.
Right, and my reason for closing it now is because, as you well know, George is a very, very busy man, and so is his crew. To close it in a moment's notice to due to floodwaters may or may not be possible with the staff we have. So we thought, let's be ahead of the game, let's close it. There was no reason not to at the time, and there's nothing prohibiting us if for some reason, miraculously, that the fort decided that that property was not to be used as a fishing access site, that we couldn't reopen the gates. I mean, it's not, I mean, we didn't take the site out, we just closed the gates. Ms. Holcomb.
Well, I'm under the understanding that the people that donated that money to have it fixed are not very happy that we closed the gate without any notice. There was a lot of public comments, there was a few meetings to even make that decision to put that temporary site in, and for nobody even knowing that it was closed, I mean, we didn't know until it was done and over with. So if we don't open that back up, are we paying them back their $1,000?
I think that the money was spent on establishing the site, and it's been well used, and it's run its course. Unless we want to take the wages back that were used to establish the site, then no, the money wouldn't be refunded. Because the site's been, the site was established, it's been utilized, it's still there. Mr. Michelson.
Mr. Perrin and I went through last year, Bill Perrin went down to a water deal, building under that a year ago, or 2 years ago now, when I was first counselor, and one of the biggest things was a $42 million a year fishing industry, recreational industry that flows through this Bitterroot River alone. $42 million.
I'm aware.
Okay. So tell me the advantage of shutting a fishing access site would have to do that would bring business into this town by closing something that brings $42 million through this thing. Give me a reason why you would close that. To me, that's closing off business and recreation for people to come into town that would spend their money here. And by you closing the gate, just because, to me, it's taking away business, and you ran on moving this town forward. And by closing gates and putting padlocks on it, in my estimation, you're not promoting business or the fishing industry, you're closing the doors to it.
You just said that I closed the fishing access just because.
No, you did.
And that's not true. I think I was pretty clear in my reasons for closing the fishing access site. And I guess I'm a little unclear as to whether this agenda item is about whether the mayor has the authority or not to close the site, or whether it should be, or if it's the question of should the site stay open or should the site be closed. I'm confused about what the intent is here.
Well,
Ms. Barker.
We still have a contract with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to keep that open as a temporary park still.
I don't believe we have a contract.
What was all the money that we spent together to get it together? It said a one-year contract with them for that, that we would keep it open as a temporary.
Who signed the contract?
Jim Cruz and the...
Mr. Cruz.
Jim Cruz, 360 Ninth Street. I know it's not time for public comment. It wasn't a contract. It was a floodplain permit, a one-year floodplain permit to open the site on a temporary basis in preparation of developing a permanent fishing access site, which council approved before they gave the mayor's office permission to create the temporary fishing access site. So the permanent, a plan to put a permanent site in was approved before the creation of the temporary site. The temporary site was done as a test to find out if it was going to work, because where we put it, we have a situation where the floodwater comes past the site, and it's an inductive situation rather than an inductive situation. There were a lot of studies out there that people went out there and said, oh, we need to put it here, we need to put it here, we need to put it here. Taking a close look at it from both sides of the river, during low water and during high water, we picked the spot where we thought there'd be the least amount of damage and the least amount of work to restore that site after floodwaters. We didn't make very much permanent alterations out there. All we did was run the Harley rake over there to smooth out the trail and widen it a little bit, and then bank the river in a location where it would be easily restored. Okay? And we put it in an area where we have deposition of rocks, not a removal of rocks. So there's no, I can't see any reason other than a high water situation where it would be imminently dangerous to human life, where we should, where the town should go out and shut that gate. And it, come on, this is Stephenville's 10 minutes. Go out there and close the gate and put a padlock on it. It's not that tough a deal. You call me up, I'll go out and do it for you. The other site that is on private property, apparently they signed a temporary agreement with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks on around March 9th, because that was when it was published in the newspaper. It's a temporary agreement between a private landowner and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. It has nothing to do with the town. That could fall through tomorrow. And those Jersey barricades could go back up. Of course, they make a floodplain permit, which they never had to begin with to put those in. But that site could go away in a heartbeat. There is no reason that I can figure why the town, which has expended resources to put a temporary site in, shouldn't move forward to make a permanent site and not waste the taxpayers' money or the private donors' money and lose faith, to have the people in the town lose faith in the town. The town said, at the request of people, they held private meetings. They asked us, please do something to help us. We did. And now we're going to turn our backs on them? You never give anything up that you've gained. If you fight the government and you win something, you don't give it up. You'll never get it back. In this case, the people have fought, and they got something, and they won. We should not backtrack now. Continue the study, see what's going to happen out there, and see how bad it's going to be, because I don't think it's going to be very bad. I've been going by out there taking pictures every day. I'm stalking that river site, yeah. I'm checking it every day to see what's going on. What's the requirement of a floodplain permit, by the way? We're supposed to go out there every day and look at this. We have an active floodplain permit. We need to stick with the plan. Thank you.
I think it's safe to say we've entered the public comment section. Is there any other discussion from the council before we open to public comment? Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion that we direct the mayor to reopen the town of Stephenville temporary fishing access site.
Is there a second? Ms.
Holcomb. Can we have public
comments? I'll second it.
As soon as they go get through their motion. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to direct the mayor to reopen the town of Stephenville temporary fishing access site. Is there any discussion from the council? Ms. Holcomb.
I remember when we were discussing this and back and forth. We've heard a lot of people that didn't want us to move it to where the CAPS wanted us to move it, and then we heard the fishermen going down, coming in saying, can we figure out something to do so we're not having, I mean, I'm watching these guys trying to put a raft or their boat from the bridge, very unsafe, into the water. So that's when this temporary site came up, and there was so many people in this room that were so for it. I don't understand what's happened. I mean, that's why we approved it, because everybody that was in the room, just about everybody in the room was for this. And everybody was coming in, thank you so much for finding a solution to the issue.
Okay. Is there any further council comment? Okay, we'll open it up to public comment. If you please come forward to the podium and state your name and address. Ms. Knapp.
I don't even know where to start on this one. I'm a member of the park board, so I'm speaking as a member of the park board. I was a member of the park board when the agreement was made. First of all, I want to clarify that, Mr. Michelson, you said that the email said that we were, that the park board said that they had made the decision. That is not what the park board email said, and so I would like to read the email. It in fact says it's up to the park board to make recommendations. Okay? So the email that is being talked about, catch my breath. So this was from me to the council and to the park board. I'm addressing the town council item to direct the mayor to reopen the town of Stevensville temporary fishing access site. I'm writing as a member of the board. At the time, I'm writing as a member of the board at the time that the then mayor, Jim Cruz, and the park board agreed to create a temporary access for those wanting to launch their boats as the regular access site that's been used for centuries was closed by Mr. Kapp. There was a reason for making this temporary access. When Mr. Kapp placed physical barriers along the river bank, blocking boaters' ability to launch their boats just north of the bridge, the park board and the mayor met and agreed, with all the input, to open the gate, which had always been closed, to the Stevensville River Park for public access by boaters until such time as the regular access that had been used forever was reopened, if it ever was. In other words, if it was not reopened, this could potentially become permanent. Potentially. It was agreed very clearly that the gate would be closed if and when the area that was owned by the Kapps was reopened to the public, providing alternative access, and a much better access, by the way. The gate is now closed based on that agreement and the advice of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. What I'd really like to point out is that the town council agenda item is a breach of protocol. The park board is in place for a reason. It's to review such suggestions and to make recommendations. There was no, we are directing the mayor. So you were incorrect in that statement, Mr. Michaels. We make recommendations to the mayor for further action. Correct protocol would be for Mr. Michelson and Ms. Barker to present their case to the park board, and for the park board to take the case under consideration, followed by a recommendation, not a direction, to the mayor. As a member of the park board, I'm incensed that our board has not been consulted on this item and has been bypassed with the request directly to the mayor. I suggest that this become an agenda item, that this be tabled, and those making the request attend the April 17th meeting of the park board to present the case. The meeting is at 6 o'clock. I'm sure there's room on the agenda to add this item, etc. So we did not make a direction. We're saying we would like to make a recommendation. What I'm saying is this is an issue for the park board to first consider. This is not a council item until such time as a recommendation is made by the park board. Secondly, I would like to say that my recollection of our meetings was entirely different from then Mayor Jim Cruz, and that we did this because there was a closure of the site that we regularly use. There was no intention at any time in these meetings or in the park board meetings to make this a permanent site unless the regular site was never reopened. There was discussion that it could be if it needed to be. But Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has always said that the current access, which has been reopened, is the best. We're not stymieing any boat being put in the water. Parking is an issue. Parking could be back there. But to say that we're stymieing economic development, no, we're not. Sorry. So please come to the park board. Let's do this with the appropriate protocol.
Mr. Michelson.
So first off, the council couldn't bring it before you for a recommendation before the park board because we were not directed by the mayor to. This was never brought up at a council meeting to bring it before the park board for review or consideration.
But now you can, and the meeting is next Tuesday.
I'm just saying, you were saying before, that there was a reason why we couldn't, because we didn't know about it. We never brought up by the mayor to recommend to the park board like we usually do protocol, which is make a recommendation to the park board, see what they come back with as far as a recommendation to a council, and then we would go from there. Well, that was skipped, and now we went from that to this.
I think what Ms. Knapp is asking is that in regards to the protocol, she's not saying that the protocol, what she's asking is that your decision to direct me to reopen the site, the reopening of the site is what she would like protocol. The closure of the site is happening, it's been done.
Yeah.
She's asking that protocol be followed in the whatever action the council takes if the site is to be reopened. That's what she's asking for. Mr. Cruz.
Jim Cruz, 316 9th Street. Quite frankly, I don't think it belonged in the park board hand because it's an unfulfilled project that was started by the town a long time ago. My gosh, I mean, we went close to 18 months of negotiations on this thing before we got this thing done. Actually, the project goes back probably close to 40 years. Okay, we worked really, really hard. We actually had to do a significant amount of research to prove the park was a park, and we rededicated it as a park. We also went forward and got with the county commissioners and had a piece of property across the river donated to the town to be used as part of the park and as an auxiliary fishing site in case the one over on the in the river park failed. So we actually have two sites that we could use at a permanent fishing access site if we wanted to. Okay, and by the way, that's a park board item that needs to be looked at because you need to draft a resolution to incorporate that piece of property on the west side of the river into the Stevensville River Park. Otherwise, after 5 years, it reverts back to the county. And like I said before, if you get something from the government, don't give it back. Keep it. And the county is the government, right? So the town got that property. And that's a toehold for annexation across the river, by the way. That little piece of property over there, that's a toehold for annexation of the property across the river. We don't want to lose that. Okay? So the fact that we were going for a permanent site is a fact, and I can pull the minutes on the council meeting and prove that if you want to. I'll do that before the next council meeting. So we put a temporary site in after we had after we had permission to plan a permanent site. Temporary site was there to say, let's see if it works. If it doesn't work, we'll try something different. We've got the property across the river. We can do that over there. Okay, so yes, there was a plan in place that started to go for a permanent fishing access site. I don't think this is under the park board purview because it was a council decision to start the project. Park board doesn't override council. Period. End of story.
Further public comment. Ms. Grove.
Darling Grove, 264 Barker Street. Excuse me. I think this is a non-issue, and I'm, in all respect to you, Stacy and Bob, you know, the water's coming up right now. We've had a lot of snow in the mountains, and the water could keep coming up. That site is not going to be safe, and the river's going to take care of it. It's going to probably push all the rocks that get smoothed out so people can drive down there. They're going to be all gone because they're going to wash someplace else. It's a floodplain. Okay, so why you're spending so much time on this issue is beyond me. And going back to all the, and in respect to you, Jim, too, that this is, doesn't need to be brought up and hashed over. You have a lot more to do. The park board has a whole master plan that Jim requisitioned them to do. And I think you should need to get on with it. And one of the first priorities is the river park, because you have a lot of positive aspects going there right now. You have the owner of Fort Owen, who is very positive, and you have the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks that are, think are probably still willing to work with us. And in my view, there's a lot that can be done down there if we coordinate with the government agency, if we have a memo of understanding, if we work through a process where the people in this town have some input about what they want to see down there. Because that was a big mistake last year, that somebody sat in their own little place in the corner of the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and people at Fort Owen and Senator Thomas, and they brought a proposal in that none of the town had any input on. And we all felt very badly about it. And a lot of us have a very vested interest in that, because we've worked on it for years. And so it was a very unfair, the process was all wrong. But it turned out very well for all of us. It turned out very well. We have a cooperative landowner, the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks are still ready to help. I'm sure they are, because they have to. And so why you're doing this is beyond me. I think it's a non-issue. And I'm sorry, but I feel very strongly about it. So I think it's time now to let the river take care of the temporary access, and it will. And it could be even closed way into June with the potential runoff. And there, if we get a lot of water coming down early, they're going to be dumping water from the dams. And so the river is going to be high. We've seen that on our own property. So it's time to let this go. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that I would like to see this council work together smoothly and respectfully and positively. And I'm not getting that from my friends, my neighbors, and the people around me. And you see something in the paper, and that, you know, this is a good town, and there have been so many good things that have happened in the past that have, you know, we have a swimming pool, we have all the things that were done by volunteers working with the city. Volunteers don't want to work with the unless you all get your act together. So, thank you.
Chief Marvel.
So, as far as, I have a different perspective on this, going down there on a daily basis and looking at it. Just the other day, I mean, I remember when I was on the park board, the fishermen came in, a lot of fishermen, Barry remembers that, and were really pushing for this problem to be resolved, and it was temporarily. And I know that there's been some talk about, well, how's it going to affect the embankment, erosion, various other things, and maybe that's not been completely vetted. But Darlene makes a good point. The water's rising. I mean, I've just looked at the river today. It's rising quickly. It's going to be unsafe for anybody to be putting in boats very soon. So you do have time to address the issue. You have time to look at it and say, okay, can we make this a permanent site? Me personally, especially when I was on the park board, I really wanted to see River Park become something spectacular, something that families could go down there, boaters could go down there, fishermen could go down there, and they weren't on top of each other. And I don't think anybody's realizing this summer, now that the boaters know that they can get back in there, I mean, there were 7 trucks and trailers parked next to the river the other day. This summer, there's going to be a ton of people down there. The beachgoers, if you will, they'll be down there, and they're going to be on top of each other. And it's going to create some huge problems, big problems, and quite possibly law enforcement issues, too, because people fighting because they're trying to get boats in, and people are swimming, and people are doing different things. I think the town really should look at developing that back section to attract more family visitors and things like that, but also to maybe make that the launch place. I mean, the parking makes sense. It all just kind of makes sense. So, yeah, take the time. Go to the park board. Have somebody do the research on it to find out how that erosion issue is going to be dealt with. And the best way to make this into a permanent site, talk about those things. Or maybe it won't be feasible at all, but you're going to have time to do it, because it quite simply is not going to be feasible to put a boat in very soon. So, thank you.
Ms. Secker.
So, looking at, we did a lot of work on this particular issue and stuff. Here would be my suggestion is, don't give it up right away. I understand that, I know that I'm pretty sure James has gone down there, Sun City. I think you've gone down there a couple times and closed it this time of year, or even a little later once the water comes up. That back area always gets closed off every year due to floodplains or floodwaters and stuff. But what I would say is, you know, there's still stipulations with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and the new owners. They don't know everything about, you know, that particular area. They are generous enough to open that up. Like Jane Foote said, we've got a lot of fishermen that go down there. They could utilize both areas to kind of get people off of not on top of each other and stuff. They could kind of spread out, and it would spread people out a little bit more. Until last year that I was on the park board, I didn't know about that area back there. I simply didn't. I've been here for 15 years and I never knew about that area back there. But I think that would kind of spread it out. It would also give you guys the opportunity to make sure this site with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks actually goes. It's not a done deal yet, so don't give that up quite yet until things are finalized. That would be my suggestion. That's mine. And I don't think, like I said, that area gets closed off every single year just due to floodplains or floodwaters. So, but I don't know that this is the issue tonight, and I think it needs to go back on the agenda.
Any further public comment? Do you have some?
Well, I'm looking at records, and I get back to what the previous mayor said, that the launch site is being planned as a temporary launch site to get through this season. It will be evaluated daily and action taken as needed to maintain the path. George and them, or whoever, the maintenance guys, would go out 4 times a day to ensure that trash was removed and things like that. But again, I get back to the key component here. The launch site is being planned as a temporary launch site to get through this season. And so that would have, in essence, put us last season that it was open for. Under the floodplain, it tells us right here under the floodplain agreement. That the town will comply with high water and, where is it at? Excuse me, sorry about that. But we will comply with danger to life and property. And then we get to during times of flooding, the site may be inundated. Therefore, these portions of the property may be not safely accessible. So then it gets down to a legal issue. If somebody goes back there and accesses that area, we could be held liable for it. Our actual floodplain permit was signed, it looks like July 17th. So in essence, in July, not August, is when it would come up for reevaluation, where we would have to reassess, reprove, and show to everyone again that the site is necessary. So this is something the park board could handle and could make a recommendation to come back to council for, to reopen it. At this time, I kind of don't see the issue of us giving up anything because we only had it temporarily to begin with. I would understand if we had a sub-note in there that said, with further planning for a extended period or future improvements, but we signed it off that it was a temporary for that season. And I'm just reading off of the documents that were presented by the previous mayor to the landowners in regards to why we were doing what we were doing to solve the issue. So again, we have plenty of time. This is not something that we need to per se hash over another couple hours here. We could move it back to the park board, have some public comment back to the park board in regarding to this, and then to, if necessary, reopen it. But at this time, we have the high water situations going on. We already have the maintenance issues. We have nobody to go out there and check, things like that. If we're going to do this and we're asking people to participate in these boards, we need to allow them to bring back their suggestions to us as a council and a mayor, to where we can say, yes, this is a great idea, or no, let's go this route. That's kind of how I see the park board and any board that we belong to, is that we are given a task by council and mayor to look for the best scenario for our communities. That's why we ask them to be on the boards. So we have to rely on their comments. And that's kind of why I left the park board, because of those issues that we're starting subcommittees under a committee that was already doing this, when that's what the park board is established for, is to bring back that data to the council and allow council to make those decisions. It's not that they have power or authority or anything. We've just tasked them with that job. And that's where I would stand.
Mr. Cruz.
Okay, Jim Cruz again. Mr. Smith, you did a good job on your research, except you didn't go back far enough. You need to go back and look at prior council meetings where this was discussed regarding the creation of a temporary permanent fishing access site, because there was a council decision in that regard.
Town council minutes?
Further public comment, please. Mr. Perrin.
Bill Perrin, 503 Shaw's. Only just a couple of items. One of them is that my distinct recollection, not that it's actually that good now, but the big issue we had when we wanted to put the temporary one is that the people that had concerns that they were walking down there, and we as a town and a council promised them that would be temporary. Promised them. And that's how we appeased, if you want to call it, their objection to that whole thing happening, that temporary one. And we appeased it by saying it was temporary. And so I think we should keep that in mind. The other thing is that I think that it's dangerous, just in dealing with people, it's dangerous to take the attitude that we got that temporary one, so let's not let it go. We agreed that it was going to be temporary, and we really told them that we would release it if, in fact, we ever found another access, another site. The other thing is that, as I understand it, the county gave us that piece of ground, their share of that piece of ground on the other side of the river, and we should explore that. But I think MDOT has the other part of that, And so we don't have ownership of that. And that may be something that the park board should consider as being not an alternate site, but an additional site. Because there may be some better ways. Because at one time we talked about, if you remember, some of the guides felt that it was too congested on this side of the river when it was fully open. So that may be something to take a look at from the park board's perspective to see if they want to continue to work on that. And Fish, Wildlife and Parks was interested in doing that.
Ms. Motley.
So the agenda item is to direct the mayor to reopen the temporary fishing site. I would like to see you guys table it until the park board has had a chance to meet with Fish, Wildlife and Parks to see what their proposal is, what their plan is, so that we have all of the information. Right now, closing it and having it closed could be deemed a safety issue. You're not going to have vehicles back there with the high water coming up. Leave it closed. People can still walk back there, but you can't take vehicles back there. Leave it closed until we know what Fish, Wildlife, and Park has to offer. Not that the town will be involved in that, public comment will be involved in that, but, you know, or maybe the town will be asked to be a part of it. But table it, leave that open for discussion. Let the park board hear from Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to see what their plan is, and not close the door as to, no, we're not going to renew this temporary permit and make it permanent, but leave that door open so that we can see the options and what's available to the town. But leave it closed as a safety issue right now with the impending high water coming. That would be my recommendation.
Okay, is there any further public comment? Mr. Sharkey.
It might be also prudent to get a rough idea how much it's going to cost, both as far as making it permanent and the annual cost to maintain it. That seems to be the one thing I brought up at all in this discussion. And it'd be an important thing for everybody, you know, I think, for you too, for anything. It's going to cost $500,000 to build this thing. Well, you know, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mr. Smith.
I just wanted to get back to the minutes of that meeting where Councilmember Holcomb made a motion to amend her motion to authorize the mayor to open a temporary river fishing access site on the River Park property, pending the liability review and approval of the town's attorney, MMIA, and approval of the permit. Councilmember Floyd seconded the motion. The vote was called on the amendment, and all voted A, meaning the motion carried 4-0. So it was based off of a temporary access site that you guys voted on. Just want to go from the minutes.
Sure. Any further public comment? Mr. Thomas.
Craig Thomas, 4189 in the lane. If I'm understanding you correctly, it's a congested area there. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity to separate boaters. It's a better parking area. Just keep the option open. But if when the water goes down, it's an opportunity to spread them out. We're having more and more increase in the park activities, and that's one of the really nice things around here. And I don't know about the closing and the shutting it down and all that kind of stuff, but it looks like there is a real opportunity to facilitate fishing in a less congested area there. And back in the corner there, it's a lot easier to turn around in there and park and look at things. If nothing else, it just increases your parking area by about twice and has an additional area for the people you get. So if there's two or three trying to put in the same time, you would have some options of how to do that. Something for the park board to consider.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's always a park there. Mm-hmm. There's no limit to the park.
Okay, we're yes. Just public comment, guys. Renee.
Renee Hancock, 357 Mandel Drive.
I'm a new member of the park board. I'm very excited to be on it. And just sitting here, I'm excited of every, you know, of this energy, and there's a lot that we can do down at these parks. My first concern is, I agree with you guys, Loie and Vicki from the park board, that for safety reasons, I'm glad it's closed, the temporary access. We have the other fishing access. It's safer for the boaters. But there are so many issues down at the park, and we're going to be addressing a lot of these things with the master plan. So I think that maybe we can get some more involvement with the park board meetings and public comment there. So that's what I'm excited about. But for this issue and this issue only, it's about safety, the rising waters, and I'm for closing that temporary access because it is temporary. We have the other access for the boaters. But I'm looking forward to discussing this further with everybody because there's just a lot of things that we can do.
Thank you. Mr. Michelson.
Being on this council when all this was starting to go, the temporary site, as Mr. Smith did say, was right, but it also was in the process of being permanent down the road. It was never just temporary.
Let the council member finish his comments, please.
Propose that down the road, if everything worked out, at some time down the road, if all the pieces fell into place, it would be a permanent site. Not that it would ever be, it was just talked about. Not that it was, we're going to make it a permanent site. Because we did not know. We still don't know if we can do it. There's a lot of hurdles to go through to make any fishes access site a permanent site. And it's a big deal. Like you say, it should be in, you know, like I say, probably a master plan or whatever with the park board, and that's a good idea. But I truly believe if we're going to close it due to high water, that's a good sign. It's a safety issue. But I do not believe we should keep it closed until the master plan is done. I would feel like once the high water goes down and there's still time and there's boaters out there that want to go fishing, why should they be turned away? Thank you.
Okay, the motion on the floor is to direct the mayor to reopen the Town of Stevensville temporary fishing access site. It has been seconded. Is the council prepared to vote? Okay, that is a yes. Mr. Smith?
No.
Ms. Barker?
No.
Ms. Holcomb?
No.
And Mr. Michelson?
No.
Okay. Motion fails. That concludes the new business portion of the agenda. I'm sorry. I saw your name twice. Discussion decision, schedule a meeting of the committee of the whole in order to draft resolution 339A regarding email and website administration. Council members Michelson and Barker. Mr. Michelson.
Yes, I would like to schedule a COW meeting so we can address this email issue that recently happened between all of us, between the council and the mayor, and we need to draft a good policy. Our city attorney has advised us to get this program right away, which we are. He has also given us some tools via Hamilton and Missoula's policy to look at and to do a workshop and get it right and get it down so there are checks and balances in every direction so that nobody can just go in without just freewheeling and start looking at these emails. They are public, yes, but they also have a process you have to go through to be able to get to them. So scheduling a COW meeting, I think, would be a good start for all of us. Start working together, not only as a council, but as a mayor, and break this bond, or break this division between us, and hopefully this will get things going in the right direction.
I'll second that motion.
Was that a motion?
No.
Mr. Michelson.
I would make a motion to schedule a meeting of a committee of the whole in order to draft resolution 339A regarding email and website administration.
Would you like to propose a date?
Isn't it usually the third month, third week of the, would be the 19th of this month?
It would be the 16th. We hold them on Mondays.
Okay.
If that's the date you choose, then
yes,
we'll get it noticed.
Yes, I would like to make it the 16th
of April. Okay, it's been moved to schedule a Cal meeting for the purpose of, or a committee of the whole meeting, in order for the purposes of drafting Resolution 339A regarding email and website administration on the 16th of April 2018. Is there a second? Ms. Holcomb.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion from the council? Any public comment? Mr. Moore.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What's the difference between process and public?
What's that?
In terms of the administration of the website, can you define what you mean by something as a process as opposed
to... Oh, sure. It's right in there in the packet. If you want to get any emails from anybody, it is public, but there is a process.
What is the process?
The process is you have to go to the clerk's office. You have to make a request to what emails you want, what dates or whatever, from whom. She gives you a form to fill out. You fill out that form, and then they have a process within themselves, guidelines, which Mr. Smith read out last time at the last meeting, that is called a Freedom of Information Act form that you have to fill out. And nobody's exempt from that. Nobody.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is true.
Okay. Is there any further public comment? Mr. Sharkey.
My wife and I did just exactly what you described.
How does that relate to the motion on the table?
Yeah, there's a motion.
We did just exactly what you described.
Yeah, it's got a motion on.
We got everybody's emails but yours, which we thought was conspicuous by its absence. And then rumors going around that you somehow deleted your sent file, therefore your emails aren't available.
They were available.
Call for a point of order.
Point of order.
Okay, point of order has been called. We'll proceed to vote. There's no further comment on the agenda item.
Do we have comments?
Ms. Howell, please, on the agenda item, or on the motion.
I was just wondering about this 339A. Are you talking about public requests for emails, or are you talking about accessing emails in the office?
Right. We're talking about Resolution 339A, which is our resolution of the town of Stevensville.
But is that, are you talking about when the public makes a request?
No, we're talking about redoing
it. Or internally.
Internally redoing it within ourselves at a Cal meeting, so what happened does not happen again.
Okay.
Mr. Motley.
Is this a regularly scheduled time of 7 o'clock for this meeting to occur?
Yes, Cal meetings, I believe, happen at 7 o'clock.
Thank you.
You bet. Is there any further public comment on the motion on the table?
Will your attorney be there?
It's a discussion meeting. It's up to the executive or the council to request his presence.
You need some kind of expert advice.
Sure. Okay. If there's no further comment, we'll call for the vote. Ms. Barker.
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb.
Aye.
Mr. Smith.
Aye.
And Mr. Michelson.
Aye.
Okay.
Motion passes. We'll convene at 7 o'clock on the 16th for a Cal meeting. Now that does conclude the new business section of the agenda. We'll move on to the executive report. Do my best to be brief. I attended the executive forum in Polson last week. Fantastic information was provided by MLCT, MMIA, and the local government center. There was ample opportunity to network with other mayors, sharing experiences, and that was very helpful. Fun fact, there are 44 new mayors that were elected across the state in November, which is an astounding number. just over 20 of them were at this conference, so we got to interact a little bit. I attended a Ravalli County Commission meeting to support an application that asks the governor to declare 3 census tracts in Ravalli County as opportunity zones. Those zones would allow tax breaks for capital gains investments in those census tracts. Stevensville happens to lie within one of those requested census tracts, and so I went to support that cause. In the month of March, I worked 145 hours. I've received a resignation from Park Board member Eddie Olwell. I'd like to thank Eddie for his time on the board and his contribution to the good work that the Park Board does. And coming up, I'll be issuing 2 proclamations, in fact, next week, for Student Leadership Week, recognizing student leaders in our schools and supporting their training activity as they prepare for their future stations as leaders in our society. And the other proclamation will be for National Volunteer Week, recognizing the many volunteers that serve in and around our community and encouraging others to volunteer as well. And I have Mr. Olwell's resignation. It just says, Park Board members, I'm writing to inform you that I'm resigning my position on the board. Family and business obligations, along with my commitment as the board chair of Water Forum, make it difficult for me to make a full commitment to the Park Board. I apologize for any inconvenience, and thank you for volunteering to enhance Stevensville's Park Fest. Eddie Olwell. Move on to council comments. Ms. Holcomb.
I know that everybody keeps saying that we need to work together, and I am in 100% agreement. I think a lot of problems is we're finding a lot of things out after the fact. And I think that's why we're bringing this all up. Like, one of the comments you made in your executive report that you went on behalf to for this thing with the commissioners, and you wrote a letter in approval for this, but you wrote it as the town of Stevensville. We didn't approve this. So I'm not understanding why you would bring a letter to them approving this when you didn't bring it in front of us to say it was okay to put your name to this letter approving that the town of Stevensville approved it. We didn't approve it. We didn't approve this letter. So I'm a little confused on that, why you would, I mean, I guess it would have been okay if you would have said, I, as mayor of the town of Stevensville, approves this, but you put it as the town of Stevensville approves this, and you never brought it in front of us. So I'm just a little concerned that we're a little tired of things becoming, we're finding out things after the fact. We would like to know what's going on. Bill Perrin knew about it because he went to the meeting with you. We didn't know about it. So I just would like for us to start working together. Keep us in the loop with stuff. Instead of us finding out and then we're having all these people screaming at us, making it look like it's our fault, but we don't even know what's going on. We didn't know about this Opportunity Zone grant that you wrote a letter on behalf of the town. And as I'm understanding, you had plenty of time to bring it to our 27th or 26th March meeting to ask for approval to sign that letter, but it was never brought to our attention. So me as a council person, I would really like if we could start working together and if you would keep us in the loop of stuff and just bring it and put it on the agenda. That's all I ask. And I do want to make clarification in the Bitterroot Star. I haven't had time to call. In our last meeting, I never said that you personally attacked me. I said I felt personally attacked by someone not in the meeting after you were asked to resign from the fire department. I said we felt like we were bringing personally attacked being on the news and everything. So I just want to make that clear that I never said you personally attacked me. So, just wanted to bring that up. Thank you.
Okay. Have a kind of comment, Mr. Michelson.
Yeah, I have a board report. It's our last planning and zoning meeting. It was on 3/21/18.
Mr. Michelson, we're not quite to.
Oh, we're not board.
Not board yet. Oh, okay. Unless council's through with their comments.
Oh, okay. No.
Mr. Smith.
I would just like us to see us start kind of focusing on our agenda more towards issues that are really functionally of our community. The streets, the water leakage, the park issue. Here again, we bounced the security issue back to the park board again because we had that solved when I was the park board chairperson through the park board, and then we had it solved when Tanya was the park board chairperson, and now we've bounced it back to the park board again when we know what the issue is. We need security cameras. We need security lighting. So I don't see that needing to be part of the master plan for the park board. It's great to have the master plan, but these are issues that have come before us as a council, not me myself, right, until recently, but prior councils and administrations. And so we understand the underlying issues of some of these problems, and I think we need to start addressing them one at a time and start solving them instead of pushing them down the road further and further. I just really think we need to start focusing more on that, and I don't know how we would do it, whether we do it via agenda items, via it coming back up routinely at a month schedule or whatever, until we can start moving some of these issues into a positive arena. I think we need to see them over and over and over again, because the fact that we're losing 7 million gallons of water a month and don't know where it's going and don't really care that it's costing us money, to me, is not doing what I was elected to do. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. Councilperson Barker.
As a council member, I would like to see a lot more of the unfinished business on the agenda. Seems like there's a lot out there that we haven't even discussed. And we need to, in order for us to be able to move forward again as a council and to work together as a council, I think that those issues also need to be solved. I'm just seeing a lot of new business, but I know we have a bunch of old stuff that we need to get taken care of. And if we can see that move forward, that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Mr. Mickelson.
A good example of Mrs. Barker would be like in yesterday's Ravelli Republic's article where you stated a lot of work, spring cleaning, a lot of work going on in the town of Stephenville, which is great. But to take it to the press first without even bringing it to the council, like the bathroom situation and the lights over at the park and all that. In fact, we asked you in January to come back and give us a report on lights and the prices and everything, the availability you said you would do. We have not had a report from you back yet from on that. That would be unfinished business, and we haven't heard a word from you on that. So, I'm not singling out just one of the things that I can think of right now that we asked you to come back as to give a report on that we have yet to receive anything on.
Okay. Any further council comment? Okay, move on to board reports. Mr. Mickelson.
I have a planning and zoning board report on 321. Megan Hansen, Dan Ritter, John Kellogg, Greg Chilcott, Jerry Phillips were there. We approved the minutes of the January 31st meeting. Mayor Brandon Dewey gave a report on the staff recommendation. He did not have a written one, but he did state that in his opinion that it was a go and to go ahead with it, with the developmental code part of it. Gary Cyphers gave a report on the past history, and Gary Elliott gave a report on what he wanted to do, and this has to do with the 100 College Street block, mm-hmm. that mansion over there that they want to make into a bed and breakfast and for events. It's being rented out right now, but the Elliots would like to eventually move into it and live there. And the Greg Chilcott made a motion for a public hearing for April 11th. Megan Hansen seconded, and of course, the meeting was adjourned, all in favor that we would go ahead with the process and see that if we could make it go. St- Stacy Bartlett also did say that she would be sending letters out and the necessary paperwork to do the process. That's it. Thank you.
Any other board reports?
I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we adjourn.
Is there a second? Ms. Parker.
Second the motion.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned.